In 1876, wealthy Bostonian Pearson Beebe chose a secluded hill in Falmouth as the spot to build his summer home, Highfield Hall. The following year, his brother James Arthur Beebe began construction next door on his own mansion, Tanglewood. Today, Tanglewood no longer exists, but Highfield Hall has been restored and is a center for arts and cultural events, and over 300 of the original 700 acres belonging to the Beebe family has been preserved as woods and is open to the public. Kathleen Brunel's grandparents were caretakers of the homes, and she's written a history of these two Falmouth landmarks, Cape Cod's Highfield and Tanglewood, A Tale of Two Cottages. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, so these homes are being referred to as cottages, but you know, you look at the size of them, look a little more like mansions. So was the term cottage used because they weren't the primary residence? Is that what it meant then?
Yes, the summer cottages. And in fact, they had more than the cottages in Falmouth, especially the J. Arthur Beebe's. They would they went to other places during the summer. They didn't spend every summer at Tanglewood. But Frank Beebe, Pearson Beebe, and Emily Beebe lived at Highfield, and then they spent the winter in Boston on Beacon Street. So, and the residences were equally just grand. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. There, I read tons of newspaper articles about the J. Arthur Beebe's and their home on Com Ave, and the description of the architecture, the just the flowers, the settings. They were in the paper almost every week.
Where did their wealth come from?
The wealth came from their father, and he was actually in the dry goods business. He was the son of farmers, Levi and Sarah Pearson Beebe, and he came to Boston as a teenager, and he worked basically as just a stock boy, you know, sweeping the floor and whatnot, and eventually raised his position and began his own business in dry goods. And he and none of the children ever worked in the business. He died the year before Pearson came up to the hill to start designing Highfield and get it going in 1876. The father died in 1875.
So it was in the late 1800s when tourism began to take off on Cape Cod, and most people coming here were drawn, as today, to the beaches. But the Beebe family chose to build those two homes up on the hill, on the family's woodlot, and not by the water. So what drew them to the woods?
Well, their father actually came down to over by Surf Drive. He had Vineyard Larch, and that's where originally they lived on the green they rented, and then they built their own place. But after he died, he had actually purchased land up on the hill for wood for his home. And so after he died, his sons went up and they decided they wanted to build on that land. And from looking at journals of Fanny Beebe and Charles Beebe, they enjoyed, as children, long walks in the woods. And it was something they were drawn to. And so, especially most of the children, they loved trees. They brought over different species of trees from Europe, and the girls, too. So they were very much drawn to the woods.
Not to mention that it's not very far from the railroad station which a lot of their guests would arrive by rail.
Absolutely. And that's why we originally have James Madison Beebe coming down to Falmouth, because you have Joseph Story Fay and other wealthy people coming in from Boston and building down here on the Cape. So it's the beginning of sort of this tourist industry on the Cape. And most of the residents were not happy about it at all.
I'm sure. No. So nature was important to the Beebe family, as you're saying, and as were the arts. And you write that a love of nature and the arts are the common threads that run through all the people who own the property over the years. And this actually ends up shaping the history of Falmouth.
Yes, because the Beebe's held concerts. Like I said, of course, they enjoyed their own walks in the woods, and they had signs everywhere for different names that they had for different areas of the woods. But they also had concerts when they were in Boston as well. They were patrons of the arts, and it was very important to them. Now, later, when other people owned the houses, what they wanted to do, the Terhunes and the Lilies, was to actually bring those things to everyone. And so you have the theater, and you have, there was an art studio. Terhune's daughter had an art studio in the barn next to Tanglewood. And the Lilies really, they didn't own the properties long. They literally turned the properties over to the conservatory, and then they gave almost 400 acres of land to be preserved. And so they all cared about, and Terhune as well, really, the arts. Great stories about Terhune and how anything in Highfield, any furniture in Highfield, anything they wanted. Falmouth Playhouse, anyone, they could come and they could just take. So his daughter said it was not unusual to come home and find massive pieces missing out of the house. And there was a really funny story about how her aunt had this bird cage, and there was a fake bird inside, and if you turn the key, it would play. And she had to have this key made for this piece, and she loved this piece so much, and she had the key inside a little table in Highfield, and it sat in the big open window. And one day they came home and the table was gone, and her aunt was devastated. You have to get the table, you know.
I have to get my key.
So, yes. Yeah. And so this was Terhune's niece and Taunton, and she had to, it was at the Falmouth Playhouse, and she had to stop a rehearsal and go onto the stage and get the key and bring it home. But so they just, Terhune just gave to the community, and so did the Lilies.
So by 1932, the last of the Beebe family had died, and E.H. Bristol, another wealthy Bostonian with a summer home in Falmouth Heights, starts the Falmouth Institute at Highfield and Tanglewood and enlists the help of Helen Randall. Now, this is perhaps one of the most surprising parts of the history of the two homes, as Helen ends up being a sly and seductive con artist.
Yes, she was quite a character, and in fact, she's a book all in and of herself. The first time I find her is in the early 1930s, and she is presenting herself as a world-renowned astrologer in Florida. And her little shtick is what she did is she would give free events in hotels, different places, and she worked in a hotel at the time, and so I think this is how she got started. And she would give these events, and the astrology, I guess, didn't go so well, because the year later, she is a leading health expert in diet, and she is a doctor. She says that she's a doctor, and that she has actually ministered to people such as Gandhi and presidents, and of course, all of this is bogus, but E.H. Bristol happened upon her because a friend of his had gone down to Florida. His wife had received a terrible diagnosis, and she supposedly only had 6 months to live. They went down to Florida, and they went to one of Helen Randall's talks, and she prescribed a certain diet to the woman, and the woman began following the diet, and she got better. And so she believed that Helen Randall was responsible for her health. And so when they came back to the Cape, they told E.H. Bristol about her, and he went down to see for himself. And they developed sort of a business relationship, and she had her eyes on Highfield and Tanglewood. And at some point, she said that he had promised her half ownership of the buildings. And it took a long time before Bristol realized that she was a fraud. She'd been married multiple times, and I believe from my research that she was married to more than one person at the same time.
Wow. You're right. There's a book in there.
She had a daughter who does not appear on the scene. I found out about the daughter only because she was arrested all over the East Coast. She was arrested for presenting false mail fraud, practicing medicine without a license. She had a little place in the hills in the Carolinas where she would actually, you know, treat people.
Wow.
And she had no license whatsoever,
no
medical background.
But they did finally discover she was a con artist.
They did. And really the enterprise, the Falmouth Enterprise, was the leader here. Yeah. So even as she was touting all of her, and what she touted tonics and different things, and she told everybody that she gave a different birth date. She said that so that she would be in her 50s when she was actually in her 30s. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons she did that is because one of her tonics was for longevity youth.
Yeah.
And she changed her name various times. So she was Rosalind Randall. She was Helen Randall. She was covering her tracks. But I'm surprised because she would go back to places where she'd been arrested a couple of years later.
Wow.
With a new name. Right. And she would start all over again.
So when your grandparents were caretakers, the property had already had a long history of hosting theater. And as you mentioned, the Terhune family was very active in keeping the theater alive at Highfield.
Yep.
Can you talk a little bit about what happened to Tanglewood?
Yes. So Tanglewood, at the time my grandparents came down in 1960, they lived right next door to Tanglewood. And everybody asks me, where is Tanglewood? That's the main question that I get. get from everyone. So when you're heading up to Highfield and you're just about to take your left where it says parking for Highfield, you would take a right instead. And if you head up that road, there's a circular area, and to the right there are woods, and that is where Tanglewood stood. And then there's a house straight back. That's where my grandparents lived. And then the barn is next to the house, and that is where the musicians would practice and where Terhune's daughter had a studio. And my grandparents were caretakers, and so Tanglewood at that time was sort of like a dormitory for all of the students who came in the summertime to do from Oberlin to do the theater at Highfield. And so she cooked for them, and my grandfather tended bar, and my grandmother planted the garden, the sunken garden. And one of the stories in our family, you know, family lore, is that it took her a long time. She planted the garden, cleared and planted the garden from seed, and enlisted the help of Terhune's children and my grandfather. And after it was done, I don't know how long it had been done, but during the night, we always heard it was one of the students. Some people at my book talks thought it was a member of one of the families that lived there, but they drove the car and made a little late night reveling and drove the car right into
the garden.
But Tanglewood eventually was torn down in the 70s. And it was because after the Lilies gave Tanglewood and Highfield to the conservatory, they had an historical architect go into the buildings and see if they were salvageable or if they had any architectural merit. And when he looked at Tanglewood, what he found is that it had been changed so many times over the years to be used for various purposes, whether it be dorms or whether it be research laboratories, homes, you know, all these different things that he, and so many pieces had been removed that he felt that it was no longer viable. So they tore it down.
And that was what was supposed to happen to Highfield, was supposed to be torn down as well. Mm-hmm. I remember what Highfield looked like. I mean, the weather inside, you know, it rained inside the building and the raccoons had been in there for years. And I can remember when that effort started and I thought, how are they ever going to restore that place? I mean, you could see it had been a beautiful place. And it is really amazing, the work that was done on
it. It's absolutely amazing. And one of the things that Terhune's daughter told me is that the Highfield that we all know in the 70s, that looked almost like a southern plantation.
Yeah, they had a big front porch thing there.
You know, a lot of people thought that was because Terhune was some sort of Texas oil man. And she said, my father was nothing of the sort. He was a teacher in Connecticut. You know, he was nothing like that. And the reason that he put the columns on the building was because of something to do with the structure. Mm-hmm. And he needed them as support. And so he just went with that style because the columns. But I found a picture from 1899, actually a drawing of Highfield, and it is amazing to me to see that the Highfield of today is that building.
Yes,
they really did so much research.
Oh my gosh, they really did.
And went through all of the plans, you know, and in my book I really focus on the people, but you know, I did have a chance to look at these earlier photographs and to look at some of the plans and the discussions of the architects and to see that the town really came together to restore this building.
Yeah, all private money
and to fight. Really fight. If you go back to the newspaper articles,
it was very
not
controversial.
Pleasant.
Yeah.
And, you know, and what were they saving? And a lot of people said, oh, these lords of the manor, and we're not saving that. You know, what I found from my research is what they were saving is inherently a piece of Falmouth and is a part of our culture. And now everyone can enjoy the art and concerts and everything that the Beebe's loved. And ironically, you know, the Beebe's, who they felt were really sort of taking over and not true residents of Falmouth, because of them, we have these woods that you find nowhere else on the Cape. Mm-hmm. And truly, I mean, the Lilies are the ones who were responsible for preserving it. But because the Beebe's enjoyed it so much, we have those woods. And we also have now, because of the subsequent owners, all of the arts that the Beebe's enjoyed. But now everybody enjoys it. And it's ours, you know, truly ours.
So when you're doing your book talks, do you get questions about the ghost stories?
Yes, I do. And originally I wanted to write about Highfield because, as I said, my mom grew up in Tanglewood. She was 5 years old when she came here. And she had stories. And I grew up hearing these stories. And I put one of the stories into the book. And she was at Highfield with her sister. And Mr. Terhune's daughter, and or granddaughter rather. I've been talking to his daughter on and off. She's a great lady. So there's his granddaughter. And so anyway, they were having a sleepover, and she would say, oh, the beds were all made for us, and there were Sundays waiting for us. They would bring Sundays up, and it was just this magical experience when you could go sleep at Highfield. But she was alone in the room, and she was waiting for her sister and a friend, and this woman went by. Now, where the room was, there's a wall. You can't go anywhere else. And this woman just walked by in period dress. And, you know, my mother thought, that's strange. She didn't know who it was. And she thought maybe it was the woman bringing the sundaes. But, you know, she never came back, you know. And my mother went out and looked while she was gone. And as I was talking to Pat Terhune, she said that her daughter would be outside on the swings. And she would see this woman. And the interesting thing about both stories is that they thought it was an actual person. They didn't think they were seeing a ghost. And this woman would come, and she would see her. And I guess she thought maybe it was one of the actors. Mm. You know, she didn't know. And then she would just walk right through the wall into the building. And Pat said, why didn't you ever tell me about it? And she said, well, you know, I didn't really think about it. It would just happen here and there. And I, you know, I just shared it with my friends. And so everyone I talked to had stories.
No, I'm sure they did. Cape Cod's Highfield and Tanglewood, A Tale of Two Cottages. Kathleen Brunell, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm Indy Todd. Thanks for listening.